today we are talking about Peckham.
Now, Ollie, if I say the word Peckham, what do you think of?
Only Fools and Horses.
Ah, yes.
I think of Trotter's yellow van.
The famous tit.
Tit, yes, indeed. yeah. What tit stands for?
Trotter's Independent Trading, I think.
Yeah. I love that we've got tit straight in, straight away.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't estrange or alienate anyone.
Louis, if I say Peckham, you say?
Rye.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went there.
all right, any more? If I say Peckham, what do you say?
This is a funny one. Pecknam.
Uh-huh.
Do you know where the nickname comes from?
Yeah.
Do you know? Yeah.
It's sort of gang affiliated, isn't it?
Yeah. So the Nam being a pretty bleak reference to Vietnam, reflecting Peckham's now fading reputation for crime and gang violence. I've got one more. Just the fact that it's a trendy neighbourhood. So much so that in 2019, Time Out magazine listed it as the 11th coolest neighbourhood in the world.
Shall we start off following that little taster with the name and where it all comes from?
Peckham, what's in a name?
What's in a name?
So it first appears in the Doomsday Book. Klaxon. I know, we should get a Doomsday Book Klaxon because we're going to be mentioning it a lot.
We should.
And a quick reminder of what the Doomsday Book is for those of you who have forgotten your early medieval history. Basically, in 1086, 20 years after William the Conqueror had invaded and conquered Britain, he decided it would be a good idea to know exactly what he had laid his hands on. So he ordered a comprehensive record of the extent, value, ownership, and liabilities of land in England.
Wowie, that is a good def.
There we go, I went there. Because we might as well get it out of the way now.
Thank you.
Because we're going to be talking about it a lot.
Yeah, you're going to be hearing that klaxon.
And so Peckham appears in the Doomsday Book as the tiny settlement known as Peckham. And for those of you fluent in Old English, please excuse my pronunciation. And there are a couple of theories as to why it's called Peckham. It's believed to be an Anglo-Saxon word, pesh or peck. Again, forgive me. Pesh or peck meaning hill, think peak. And ham meaning village, which is where we get the word hamlet from. Basically meaning a village amongst the hills, presumably referring to the nearby hills of Honor Oak, Forest Hill, and Telegraph Hill. And it could also just mean village by the River Peck, which was a river that once flowed through the area. Uh-huh. In fact, it still does. But we'll get to that later.
Yeah, let's not ruin that.
Give me a simplified layman's history of Peckham.
Okay, I'll do my best. As already covered by Ollie, it's a Saxon place name. And so we can start our story back at the time of the Doomsday Book in the 11th century.
Hang on.
Yeah?
I read somewhere that there's archaeological evidence that indicates earlier Roman occupation in the area.
All right, mate.
Although the name of this settlement has sadly been lost now.
So, fast forward to the Doomsday Book, some... And Peckham appears in the Doomsday Book as Peckham. It was a pretty small settlement. It was known back then like as a manor, and it was given to a guy by William the Conqueror because he handed out lands to all of his, you know, supporters and the people that he wanted to be loyal to him, to a guy called Odo of Bayeux.
Odo of Bayeux.
Yeah. Do you recognize the second part of his name?
The Bayeux Tapestry.
Absolutely. Odo was half-brother of William the Conqueror and is believed to have commissioned the Bayeux Tapestry.
Which was the big tapestry that commemorates
the Battle of Hastings.
And William the Conqueror's victory.
Exactly.
I'm surprised there's not a bar in Peckham called Odo's.
Odo is currently, I suppose, the Lord of the Manor of Peckham when he gets gifted it. That then moves into sort of the 12th century. So we're in like, I don't know, 100 years odd later, King John.
You know, yes, you know, King I've heard John, of him.
Yeah, famous in terms of history of being the lion without a mane in the Robin Hood Disney film, and also much maligned in sort of Victorian scholarship as a bit of a sort of snivelling wretch, but retrospectively seen as actually probably an okay king. He apparently hunted in Peckham in the 12th
century. You mean he wasn't a lion?
No.
Right. So Peckham was a hunting ground for King John. He liked roaming the forests of Peckham and hunting boar and deer and all the other things that one hunts.
That is accurate. So that was the 12th century. We then fast forward quite a way. And by the 16th century, so the time of Henry VIII, the Elizabethan period, it was already a sort of known residential area, by which I mean for the very wealthy. Mm-hmm. And when I say residential, I mean very large homes, probably spread out, but like surrounded by fields.
Yeah.
By no means residential area.
No, we're still talking at
today.
A very rural area.
Yes, yeah. Very rural. They still, most of the area surrounding it would have been market gardens, orchards, fields that would have still been used to feed and supply the markets of the metropolis, London, which is, you know, we're talking about a time in the 16th century when the surrounding area of London still did that. Like, it was still a sort of functionary of the city in a much tighter...
Little satellite settlements that fed the big...
Yeah.
The big churning market.
Yeah. And that was also the place that you would go to, like, guaranteed, you know, be able to sell your wares.
On the market aspect of Peckham,
yeah.
I read that cattle drovers used Peckham Village, mm-hmm. as it was known then, mm-hmm. as a stopping place before going on to the markets of London, probably Smithfield Market.
Yeah.
And their herds were put out to graze on the common, which ultimately became the Rye, while they took refreshment at the various inns. And the fact that there is a Kentish drover's pub is a testament to that, because many of them came from Kent.
Yes.
Kentish drover's is still there in name. I don't think it's the same location.
Yes. That is definitely a reference to the historic function of pubs in the area.
So when did Peckham stop becoming so rural?
So that would have been by the 18th century. So only, you know, 100 years hence, in the 1700s. You already were starting to see more residential development spring up, because Peckham represented a ready opportunity at a time where there was already a lot of development happening in and around London. So you would have started to see actual, you know, rows of houses crop up along roads.
For the same reason that it happens now, right? Because people are steering clear of paying high-priced London rents.
That's exactly it. So these people, these, you know, wealthy speculators who were building housing were like, well, it's getting really expensive to do this in Mayfair, so I'm going to go try it in Peckham, because I'm pretty sure people travel that far, even if their work is a bit further away. It's the same. It's the same shit. And then in the 19th century, you'll start to see much more development, much more growth in the population of Peckham, because of course the transport system expanded. 1865, the railways came to town, and you saw Peckham Rye rail station open. A bit before that, the Tilling Bus Company, set up by a chap called Thomas Tilling, started running a route from Peckham to central London.
So it was the omnibus.
Yeah. Horse-drawn.
Horse-drawn omnibus.
Horse-drawn omnibus. And that was the first bus route to use scheduled or pre-planned bus stops. Because that hadn't happened prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
Wild as that might sound.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another thing that had happened. And that's where, you know, just further expansion of the transport system. And in that period, like so much of the rest of London, with that came huge growth in the suburbs, because people that used to have to live near where they worked could suddenly live a bit further away and get on a train and reliably get to work on time in the morning.
Or a bus.
I don't know about you, but I would have been on the train.
I prefer a bus where I can.
A horse-drawn one?
I don't know. I need to try it first.
Yeah. I think the roads are probably pretty shit.
I'm sure. Yes, and smelly.
But it probably costs a lot less.
That's true. Still, maybe I couldn't afford a train back then.
Still true today.
Can barely afford a train now.
So that's the sort of broad growth of Peckham. Where are we? Mid-19th century.
You've been very succinct there. I mean, you've brought us basically up to a Peckham that we can sort of begin to recognise now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this what we've just covered covers off a lot of the sort of suburban housing that we know today. All of that would have been thrown up in the Georgian and Victorian periods. All the kind of like, you know, crisscross of suburban streets. Basically anything pre-20th century. All of that is from this time period that we're talking about. A fun one is the block at the top of the Peckham Hill Road.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the one?
Yeah. I know Peckham Hill Road, but what block are you talking about?
The one with a rather notable restaurant on it.
Manzi's.
I have no idea.
Manzi's, I thought.
Menzies?
Benzo's.
Manzi's Eel and Pie Shop. That is on a Georgian row that was built, obviously in the Georgian period, just after they demolished the old Peckham Manor, apparently.
So the manor was there?
Manor was around there. It could have been on its land, which means it could have been very pretty large. Far away.
Yeah.
But it was around there, and they developed on that land once they got rid of the old manor house. And that block, that one that runs just as you know, it goes round the corner down Peckham Hill.
Yeah.
That apparently is sort of one of the outer limits of the development that they threw up. Bringing us back to the Victorian period, though.
Bring us back.
Taking us back. The population increased with a huge amount of, you know, additional retail also developed because you suddenly had a population to service. And Peckham Rye, or Rye Lane, became a very popular shopping district.
Yes, I read about this.
Yes, you'll hear a lot about it being a rival to Oxford Street.
Yes.
The Golden Mile.
Apparently
it was a really big deal. And so the beginnings of the now very, still very distinctive old department store on the junction of Peckham High Street and Rye Lane was founded in this period in 1867, I believe.
What was it called?
Jones and Higgins.
Yes, and it's that beautiful.
Yeah, it became that. Originally, it was just a furniture store. Just a little furniture store.
But it is that beautiful sort of frontage on the, yeah, that bows round the corner.
Exactly, yeah, that looks like a big old department store.
Yeah.
Of a certain vintage that we recognise in London. That was there, or that was founded, or the beginnings of it were founded in 1867. And in 1870, a certain George Gibson Bussey, whose name you might recognise, moved into what was then the Museum of Firearms in a building that is now obviously known as the Bussey Building.
So it was a...
It was a museum, yeah.
For guns,
back when we had those.
They haven't gone.
And it was turned into his factory, basically. He started or set up a shooting and like sports equipment business.
As in shooting as a sport.
Shooting as a sport.
So next time you're hanging out in the Bussey Building, remember that it was once a museum of guns.
Yeah.
Tell your friends.
Going further than that, even, you know, after, or that took us right up to sort of the war.
Which
First
war?
World War. And then the second.
And it was at that time that Peckham's destination sort of status began to decline?
Yeah.
Right.
That, you know, it being the sort of this destination for like leisure and retail suddenly wasn't that, you know, you couldn't be a destination just for that anymore.
No, and also, you know, your average person didn't have the resources to go, oh, yeah, I'm going to hit the shops now,
no.
You know, when you have a ration book.
No, exactly. And all the damage that had happened meant, along with the economic deprivation that came after the war, that there was a huge amount of clearance of, you know, residential slums.
True of many areas of London.
Exactly. It's a very, very common thread. And that meant that you then saw new housing developments going up to try and make up for and improve on the previous, you know, housing situation, which didn't always come to light, didn't always come to pass. There weren't necessarily these sort of utopias that they were always pegged to be, which again is a much wider story. But that also then led into, you know, the economic downturn of the 70s, 80s, the lack of investment.
Where Peckham is synonymous with gang culture.
Yeah, well, that became then, I think, a big part of the area's narrative.
Again, we should hasten to add, not exclusive to Peckham, but it's, yeah, it's a name that stands out, unfortunately.
Yeah. But in the 90s, despite the fact that that was still a presence or an element of the, you know, landscape in this area, you did also start to see more investment in community-led projects and therefore regeneration of things like Rye Lane as a destination. And a lot of the businesses that you see there even today would have, you know, were kind of set up, or the foundations for the opportunities to have businesses on that street were laid in that period.
I think that and a burgeoning art scene, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I think Peckham's label as a sort of artistic hub began to take form around the 90s, didn't it?
Yeah. And I guess there was, like, as an outer suburb, you sort of see that there was music here, there was, you know, culture here in a big way.
Music venues and galleries will begin to create a scene for a place, a certain buzz.
Yeah. Then in the year 2000, there was the famous tragic story of Damilola Taylor's murder on the North Peckham estate.
Yeah.
Now, we're familiar with violence and particularly knife crime in the city, but given the senselessness and incredibly young age of both the victim and his killers in this case, this one captured the national imagination, I suppose you'd say.
Yeah, it was a national tragedy, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, in a way that kind of few other incidents have. I mean, there are other examples, but this was a really big one. And, you know, a result of a lot of bigger factors that we've already talked about just now. But yeah, it was a dark chapter in the area's history. But more recently, things have started to be, I think, you know, Peckham is like one of the most interesting, ethnically diverse, buzzy South London areas. And I mean, well, I like it.
So do I. You and loads of other people. You and Time Out magazine.
Yeah, yeah. I think the gentrification of Peckham is just another chapter in its story.
Like, I'm afraid that, yeah, you almost can't say Peckham without... We should have said that at the beginning.
Yeah.
When I say Peckham, you say gentrification. You know, and that it sort of became the gentrified area, didn't it, for a while? It was the pin-up gentrified area.
Yeah, after East.
Yes, yeah.
But their narratives are parallels, you know.
They're symbiotic.
They are.
So we're talking about how buzzy Peckham is, how diverse it is, how exciting it is, and we've been talking about its rich history. And I think a key component of that is the big green space that sits not necessarily in its center, but sits to its south.
Because,
you know, I'm talking here about Peckham, Rye, Common and Park, or Park and Common. A fun fact about Peckham, Rye, Common. In 1767, William Blake, the poet and artist, mm-hmm, whose biggest hit you'll probably know as the lyrics to Jerusalem. It was in the charts for years.
200 years.
Yeah, still is. And he decided to walk from the city of London to Peckham Rye. And he arrived at Peckham Rye and he saw a cloud of angels in a great oak tree on the common. He wrote that he saw a tree filled with angels, bright angelic wings bespangling every bough like stars. I love the word bespangling.
That's a good one.
You need to use bespangling in the rest of this podcast.
In my day-to-day discourse.
No. In the rest of this record.
I'm going to try and get it into my day-to-day discourse. Cool. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, great. And the Angel Oak Pub, which stands right next to Peckham Rye, is a testament tribute to William Blake's vision.
There you go. Did not know that.
Was quite recently called, up until quite recently, it was called the Rye Pub, but has been changed to the Angel Oak to reflect this remarkable moment in history. Brings in the tourists, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was cool though. I hadn't clocked that.
In the early 1860s, there was a lot of concern about the prospect of the common becoming privately owned and misused. And this was kind of came to a head in 64. And there was quite a stir when Womble's Wild Beast Show came to Peckham Rye.
Womble's?
Wombell's, not the Womble's.
Oh, I was going to say. What a common land mashup.
Yeah, they. I'm not sure the Wombles go back that far.
Well, I would love it if their history was started there. That would be amazing.
Well, look into it. I don't know if there's a connection.
Anyway, what did they do?
Wombell's Wild Beast Show rolled into town, which it was a Victorian animal circus featuring camels and bears and elephants. Mm. And the local people were fed up with it. You know, it's just literally a circus act. They felt that their town was becoming...
It's a circus.
It's a circus.
No, it's actually a circus.
So they were sick of the disruption. And so they went to Parliament about it. Oh. And as a result, the Common, as well as some of the surrounding land, including Goose Green, which is nearby, and Nunhead Green, was bought by Camberwell Vestry, because it was Peckham and Camberwell, still is, as a constituency, to keep the Common as public land, thus securing the land forever.
Wow.
All because of some wild beasts.
I love that the straw that, and you'll pardon the expression, broke the camel's back, was this circus. I just assumed...
I get it.
I mean, I get it.
You know, like, you're worried about, like, overcrowding in your local park, and then suddenly a flippin' circus
shows up. A menagerie of animals
and you're
elephants.
Thinking, no, this is it.
No, this is the final straw. No, I just assumed that it was to do with housing, and that they were like, some fucking developer's going to buy the common and turn it into row upon row of Victorian houses, and suddenly there'll be no green space. That's what I figured it was.
I think
that probably was a broader concern in the mid 19th century.
You speculate, but I think around that time, we're still talking. I'm talking 1860s here. Yes, Peckham was building, but it was still very rural. There was still a lot of green space, open space around it.
Yeah, yeah.
From the mid 1800s to the 1940s, which is quite a stretch
of
time.
Chunk, yeah.
A 15-foot-tall whalebone arch stood at the Holmstall Road entrance of Peckham Rye.
You can't do that anymore.
No. And it was said to bring good luck to all who walked beneath it, probably due to its resemblance to the lucky wishbone of a chicken.
Where was it?
And was popular,
again?
Popular amongst courting couples.
Do you want to go have a kiss under the whale?
Under the whalebone arch.
What? Where? Where was that again?
The Holmstall Farm entrance to the park, which I'm getting to.
Sorry, carry on.
I'm speaking a lot about Peckham Rye.
Mate, this is great.
Shall I continue?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Oh,
I'm fascinated.
Later, a bowling green was added, as was the Sexby Garden, named after... Don't smile. Child. Named after Lieutenant Colonel J.J. Sexby, the first chief officer of the London County Council.
Ew.
And the American Garden and the Japanese Garden. So, I mean, already it opened as a, you know, this was, they did a great job when they went to Parliament and they were like, can we just have this official?
And most of that still survives today.
Practically all of it.
I've got a fun tidbit.
Hit me.
You might have got it. You might have it coming up.
Give me a clue.
The clue is something that doesn't survive today, but that was a feature of Peckham Rye. The park, sort of.
Does it involve a water course?
It involves water.
You're not taking my Lost River, are you?
No, of course. That's what you meant by water course. No,
this podcast was about to have an abrupt and early ending.
It sounds like you don't have this, so I'm going to go. There was a Lido.
Yes, there was.
Oh, okay, we do.
I mean, I knew about it, but please tell us more.
It was just,
there was a Lido.
The northern point of Peckham Rye, there was once a 50-metre outdoor Lido pool in what is now the little triangle of land that sits between Voodoo Ray's Pizza,
the Angel Oak,
and the Angel Oak, and the Morley's on the other side.
Yeah,
and the White Horse.
So the Lido was there.
There was, yeah, it was, and apparently you can still see the water fountain that was part of the Lido. That's the one remaining feature.
Okay,
because it's all concreted over, isn't it? So you can kind of see how.
Yes.
Maybe there once was a thing there, and it was a pool before it was surrounded by traffic and would have been a horrendous place to have an early morning swim.
Yeah, quite a stressful vibe.
Yeah, put it.
During the Second World War, Peckham, the whole of Peckham was hit during the Blitz. This also affected Peckham Rye. It was heavily damaged. The northwest corner of the common was home to one of London's biggest air raid shelters. So there you go. Also during World War II, Peckham Rye was the location of an Italian prisoner of war camp. And Italian prisoners of war were kept in huts right next to where the children's playground and cafe currently stand. And there was actually a tin hut up until really recently. A tin hut still stood there. And there was a joke that the fences were built very high around the camp in order to keep the local women out.
That is so not okay.
Why?
I mean...
They're Italian.
What, the assumption that Italian men...
Hunky.
Sure.
Louis, do you know what rye means in Old English?
Yes, I have. I have a thought.
What is it?
I think it means stream.
Or brook, which leads us on to our lost river of Peckham.
Ah.
I'm going to squeeze it in here, if I may.
I wasn't expecting it to crop up here, but because okay.
It's relevant to the Rye.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Given its name and all that.
Lost rivers.
There was once, and in a way still is, a River Peck that rose in One Tree Hill in Honor Oak, flowed through Peckham Rye, meandered through South London. It met the Earl's Sluice, another sort of lost river of South London, in South Bermondsey, just near the station, and then it has its confluence with the Thames about Deptford Wharf. As with other London rivers, poverty and disease flourished along its course, and locals were pretty happy to see it buried underground in the 1870s. But you can have a small little peek at the Peck. Where if you visit Peckham Rye's Japanese garden and you can see it babbling away in those quite lovely little watercourses.
That's the Peck.
That's the Peck.
There you go.
And there's little bridges over it. And
I know the one. God, yeah. It really is just a trickle, isn't it?
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go.
It's still a lost river. It counts.
It definitely counts.
I have a fun anecdotal and unverified story, which I read in a blog about the River Peck. Look, I'm really into lost rivers, right? So I went into it. So, and this blogger had said that in the 1940s, an aunt of his used to work in a pub called the Montpellier Arms. And she said that in the cellar, there was a gully with a tributary flowing through it, and it probably still does. And that would be the River Peck, flowing beneath the Montpellier Arms.
Probably just like a drain.
Probably just a drain, but it is in fact the River Peck. So, you know, don't shit on it.
Don't diss. Don't shit up. Don't shit in it.
Don't. You probably already have, not but like, don't knowingly do
not
it.
Like those peasants.
Yeah. So there you go, the River Peck.
Beautiful. One of the many lost rivers of London. Our first.
Our first, but certainly not our last.
We're going to take a short break.
Mate, trust me. Yeah?
All right, if you say so.
Lost rivers are cool, man. So, we're now going to talk about some notable buildings of Peckham. Kick us off.
From the river below to high above the street. Buildings and architecture, some of the...
I like that, actually. I do like that. Little...
You're welcome. You can have it.
Yeah. You said it. But...
Some of the notables of Peckham's landscape. We already talked about the Jones and Higgins department store building.
We did.
That is just one of a number of distinctive ex-shopping district sort of spots on Peckham Rye or on Rye Lane. So you've also got Carnes Bargains. You know Carnes Bargains?
I know it.
Great shop. Wow. The things you can't get in there, you don't need. That was once another department store. You know,
nothing you can't buy.
Okay, you just keep working on that. I'll just keep bringing the info. So Carnes Bargains was once Lonsdowne's. It's the arcade next door. Holdren's. So I was way off. Holdren's department store, which founded in 1880 and then was bought by the Selfridges department store chain in 1935, at which point it was updated to its still existing present day Art Deco facade that's admittedly seen better days.
A little bit.
But is a very classic, striking Art Deco face building. Now, that also, like so many of the area's retail, you know, icons, fell into some disrepair. And in the year 2000, Akbar Khan, an Afghan immigrant, established Khan's, as we know it now. And in 2016, they did a big restoration job to expose the glass curved roof, which has 1,000 brick. Glass bricks in it.
No.
Yeah. Have you ever gone in and you looked up?
I can't say that I've ever looked up.
Mate, it's amazing. It's got these amazing curved glass, if they're like circular bricks and they are slotted into an otherwise, I suppose, concrete like structure. I don't know. But it's a really striking, and it's like a skylight feature as well because it lets light in. So if you could look, go in next time and look up.
I will. I genuinely will do that.
Yeah, it's amazing. Other spots, other good distinctive areas. Shout out to the Peckham Islamic Centre and Mosque on Shumut Grove.
Mm-hmm.
It's very distinctive.
Yep, amazing building.
Yeah, it was established as the, what was it? It was the African Ivorian Islamic Trust in the early 90s. It actually still is predominantly like a West African Muslim congregation.
Whilst we're at the mosque, right near it, was a cinema called The Tower. Now, Rye Lane, famous for its shopping, was also quite famous for having loads of cinemas on it. At one time, there were 5 cinemas on Rye Lane.
Wow.
And the biggest of these was stood on the site of Shumut Road car park and was named The Tower because it had a big tower that was 30 metres tall and could be seen from miles around. But despite the fact that, you know, sadly, the decline of cinemas is a very real aspect of not just of London, but, you know, everywhere.
The world.
And the world. And, you know, the ones that still exist, even the ones that are no longer cinemas, are often very beautiful. Many of them have been turned into bingo halls, to be perfectly honest. There is still a cinema on Rye Lane, and that is the much-loved Peckhamplex, which is a...
not a beautiful old...
It's not necessarily beautiful. It's actually converted from an old Sainsbury's. It was converted in 94. But it's a much-loved independent cinema, and it still offers the cheapest cinema tickets that you will find south of the river.
Yeah, bloody anywhere, potentially.
Yeah, it's a cracker.
Yeah, icon. Other spots, one for the old heads. 58 Peckham High Street, up above the street, where if you walked 58 Peckham High Street at street level, you will see a nightclub, Tola, and a hair and beauty shop called Afro Queen. If you cross the road and walk to the other side of the street and kind of walk right back and crane your neck, and look above those two shops.
So you're almost outside the Kentish Drovers here.
You're close. Yeah, you're really close.
Yeah.
Above the street, you'll see a gabled roof.
Uh-huh.
What looks like a sort of funny little like hut sticking out of a long stretch of building behind, up above and behind. Kind of looks like Noah's Ark. And that
coming from behind a building.
Yeah, it's projecting out from behind like Tola and Afro Queen.
Okay, what's that?
That is an original early Georgian building built apparently in 1720.
Okay.
Still surviving on the high street.
Now it's got a new facade.
Well, the facade's been built out from it. And I think if you took that off, you would be back at what is the original building.
But what was it? Do you know?
I do not.
So what you're saying is, stand outside Kentish Drovers, look over the road, And there's a well old building somewhere in there.
Yeah, somewhere back there. You can actually see the clapboard on the side of the little Noah's Ark cool. cutty bit.
I am going to look out for
which
that.
Which is old school clapboard.
I've never seen it. Never clocked it.
Yeah.
It's just one of the many beautiful things that can happen when you raise your eyes in this beautiful city.
I wish I could say it was beautiful.
But it's still cool.
But knowing that there is still a super ancient, quite, you know, real deal bit of history there is, even if people are just partying and getting their hair done. One word quickly on the murals of Peckham.
Please, one.
A word on the murals of Peckham, of which you'll notice if you walk around Peckham, Dulwich, Camberwell, there are a number of. There's one actually connected to Ollie's story earlier. So there's a William Blake Memorial mural on Goose Green, so just off the Rye. Which was painted in 1993 by Stan Peskett. And that just commemorates the moment that a young William Blake saw angels in a tree.
Do you know anything about the one on the side of the Victoria on Bellenden Road? The old, is it a rat?
Why do I do?
Tell me.
That is by a street artist called Roa, or R-O-A. One of a number of murals that were painted as part of the Dulwich Outdoor Gallery initiative, which happened in 2012, I think.
Right.
Dulwich Picture Gallery being home to works, predominantly older ones, by old masters.
Home of J.M.W. Turner.
Yeah,
and,
there's stuff like that, but there's even older stuff.
Hogarth.
There's a lot of Baroque era paintings. So Dulwich Picture Gallery invited street artists to taking inspiration from their collection of older Baroque paintings and portraiture and paint street art inspired by those scenes, those paintings, or just the sort of ideals of that form and time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm not sure how the rat dog...
It is a rat dog,
feeds into that.
And there's a mural just over the road from it on the square opposite the Begging Bowl restaurant, which is sort of Battle of Britain. There's a Spitfire.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing or is that different?
That is, again, part of the Dulwich Outdoor Gallery. That's by a guy called Walter Kershaw. And he basically crowned the whole exhibition because he is what was known as or has been termed England's first graffiti artist or something, because in the 1970s he painted on the side of lots of like dilapidated, disused, soon to be condemned housing and factories and buildings in the north of England. He's originally from Rochdale, and he would brighten them up often momentarily before they were pulled the fuck down. And that big mural is done by him and is based on an old Dutch master's painting, which was subsequently imitated by Constable, who people may know.
Yes.
British painter, iconic British painter. And it's called Landscape with Windmills. And as you'll note in that mural, there is a landscape and there is windmills. There's also a Spitfire, which is pretty freaking baffling. Apparently, that is just because Mr. Kershaw happened to be a fan of the planes because his dad was RAF ground crew in the Second World War.
So he just banged a Spitfire
in it. So he put a Spitfire in it because he could.
Fair enough. I mean, he's a graffiti artist. Like, he doesn't need to follow them rules.
Do what you want. So there's lots of those bits from that exhibition all around. And I think that is a big part of the legacy. Although,
yeah, and it again touches on what we spoke about earlier about Peckham's... I'm hesitant to call it a regeneration, but Peckham's evolving art,
yeah,
renown,
yeah, yeah,
for want of a better, much better expression.
Totally.
Cool. So that kind of moves us on quite well to Peckham in culture populaire.
Yes.
What have you got for us? I mean, I can start if you'd like.
Yeah, you kick us off. I've been talking for a long time.
I mean, I can take us back to the sort of 60s with... there's a pretty famous book by Muriel Spark called The Ballad of Peckham Rye. Have you heard of it?
I have heard of it. I've not read it.
Muriel Spark also wrote The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, which was a famous book turned into a film with Maggie Smith. Anyway, The Ballad of Peckham Rye is about Dougal Douglas, who arrives in Peckham, and basically chaos follows close behind after his arrival. He's a con man who takes on multiple full-time jobs, he befriends the local people, and he gets involved in fights, and Dougal just sows discord into the lives around him. And Peckham Rye is a featured spot in the novella where, you know, quite often the characters go to fight and get up to hanky-panky.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Is Peckham Rye the setting?
Yeah, the whole of Peckham, and you know, it actually branches out to Camberwell at one point and goes, it's a sort of quite classic South London novel.
Love it.
I mean, the fact is, with Peckham, where do you start? Because Peckham permeates so much culture, and the amount of references to Peckham in grime and rap and hip-hop music must be...
hard to trace.
Yes.
Hard to track, I should say. Pretty easy to trace. I was literally listening to tune today. What was it? Was it like French the Kid or something? I'm not going to try and pinpoint.
What, but there's a reference to Peckham?
Yep. So talking about music, because I think that is a good one... you know, music's been a big part of the cultural scene in Peckham in, you know, the 20th century, certainly. In the 70s, when there was a real boom in West African and Caribbean music, Jamaican music, of course, reggae, ska, lovers rock. There was a record store that was founded here called Intone Records and Tapes, which was one of a number of shops and labels that were founded in the area and started to develop this sort of, you know, cultural identity as a music destination and a sort of, you know, space in the same way that I suppose Brixton was doing kind of similarly at the time. Dub Vendor opened its first shop in Peckham in the late 70s. Dub Vendor is now a sort of shop and also had a label called Fashion Records. People who know reggae music will know about Dub Vendor, trust.
I believe it. Mate, I know Dub Vendor. you can't kick me out of Dub Vendor.
I don't think it has a Brixton Moore story anymore, but sure.
No, but no, it does.
You can't kick me off Dub Vendor. So yeah, that's a big part of the like cultural sound back in its history.
In it. Should we move on to a blue plaque attack, or do you want to talk about Rye Lane?
Let's talk about Rye Lane quick, because that was a really fun film. I like that film. I watched it today.
Good for you.
Yeah. It's set in and around the environs of Peckham and Brixton, which is all obviously good fun. Literally everywhere you ever walk, it's there. It's on the streets.
Does Cannes feature?
Cannes, they are out front of Cannes. Yeah. And it's kind of like, it kind of lampoons the rom-com, the classic 90s rom-com, in a sort of like hyper-speed internet generation, multicolor way. The script's really good fun. There's also cameos from, Colin Firth.
Famous Peckham, well, legend.
It's just good fun, isn't it? They proper draw the line between.
Well, it's supposed to be.
Draw the line from.
I heard that it was a sort of. It's not Richard Curtis, but it's if Richard Curtis were to make a movie about Peckham.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's head up the blue plaque attack.
Okay.
Got one?
Yeah, I got one.
Is it an official blue plaque or is it just a notable resident?
Notable resident.
So let me, before we get into the notable resident. There are only 3 official blue plaques in the whole of Peckham. Can you believe that?
Okay. I've got one. I'm wondering if this counts.
Go on, hit me.
No, you go.
I want to talk about Dr. Harold Moody, who is one of the 3 official blue plaques, or he has one of the 3 official blue plaques. And he was a campaigner for racial equality, and he's honoured with a blue plaque at his former house and medical practice at 164 Queen's Road. He came to London from Jamaica in 1904 to study medicine at King's College, but he was denied a hospital appointment because of racial prejudice. And so he set up on his own as a GP, and he established a practice in King's Road, Peckham, which is now King's Grove.
Right.
And he then moved to Queen's Road, where he lived and worked. And in 1931, he formed the League of Coloured Peoples, which campaigned on race equality and civil rights. Una Marson, who we talk about in the Camberwell episode, who was the first black female radio presenter on the BBC, when she came over from Jamaica, she lived with Moody, or lodged with him, at his home in Queens Road, and became a bit of a protege of his, and was actually secretary for the League of Coloured Peoples before she went on to her broadcasting career. Oh. But back to Moody, he was named in 2017 as one of the 100 Great Black Britons list, and there is a bust of his head on the fourth floor of Peckham Library. So he's honoured there.
A notable building we missed out.
Yeah, an L-shaped building was designed by the architect Will Allsop, and it was awarded the Sterling Prize.
Wait a minute, did you just go back to buildings?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey!
You know, just, you know, shout out to the library. It's big and it's there.
Fair, it is.
Okay, so any other big Peckham residents? Obviously, there's Rio Ferdinand.
Yeah.
I can't remember the estate, but he was born in Peckham.
Yes, significant sports stars. Kai White, the BMX silver medalist,
yeah,
Olympic silver medalist. He was born here and I think trained at the BMX park in Burgess Park. Acting talent in the form of John Boyega, Star Wars, etc. Claire Foy lived here after uni.
I mean, that's pathetic, man. That's pathetic. Yeah, the amount of
tenuous. I was just in the acting space, wasn't I?
All right. I mean, no disrespect to Claire Foy, but you know.
Okay, so let's do a real deal acting space, actually from Peckham, actor Ashley Walters, a.k.a. Asher D from So Solid Crew.
And Top Boy, right?
Yeah, he acts under his real name, Ashley Walters. And is notable for his role in Top Boy. And was Asher D from So Solid Crew, which is like...
Louis.
What?
Louis.
Yeah.
It's time to go to the pub.
Okay.
Which pub are you going to?
Let's go to... Ooh.
That's quite a sound you just produced. This is the kind of sound that comes out of him when you mention the pub.
It was, wasn't it? Okay, so... I've got a couple of pubs, but...
Okay, stop farting around. Let me make this easy for you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a couple of pubs and then you can settle on which one you like. We'll talk about some of the classics of Peckham first. I mean, suffice to say, Peckham is chock full of pubs, like lots of areas of London. There's great ones. I'm going to kick us off with some classic Peckham pubs in the Prince of Peckham.
That's
a bit of a classic. The Gowlet.
That's real deal.
Is a bit of a classic.
Real deal.
Before we get to anything gastro, before we get to anything kind of, we've already mentioned the Kentish Drovers.
Less said, the better. I'm sorry, this is so unfair.
No, the thing is, with the Kentish Drovers, you can leave your cattle on Peckham Rye.
Around the corner, there's actually a pen. the Gowlet is great. They do delicious pizzas. And it's a real boozer.
It's a real boozer.
It's a real boozer. You got to give it that.
But went there on New Year's Day once and people were still going from the night before. And it was a vibe.
I can believe it.
Yeah.
But I guess if we're going a little bit more mainstream, the Victoria is a really solid pub.
We haven't really spoken about Bellenden Road and the bouginess of Bellenden Road.
Yeah. Gentrification Central.
Gentrification Central.
The hub.
The hub. And the Victoria is arguably the epicenter of that.
It stands right in the middle, yeah.
But it's an amazing building. I mean, the pub's been there since the 1700s. I read.
Yeah, it's a lovely old pub, beautiful interior, all wood and glass, lots of space, great beers behind the bar. Yeah, no, just a really solid.
Yeah, it is.
Two banks of four, nice straight bat. If I've got to go, just. That would be the pub that I'd just be like, yeah, it's reliable.
It is a reliable pub. Let's move on to food. Let me name check some classics of Peckham.
So many goodies.
So many goodies. We've already talked about Manzi's for your pie and eel fix. Ganapati for curry. Oh. Il Giardino for your Italian, your cozy Italian vibes. I think it features in Rye Lane.
It does heavily feature in Rye Lane.
You've got Artusi, which is a very...
bougie Bellenden Road Italian.
It is. It's classy, but it's quite humble.
Yeah, it is quite good humble, food. I suppose. I've not actually eaten in there. Begging Bowl, though.
Begging Bowl for your Thai fix. Like, and then on right by the Rye, you've got the double whammy of Voodoo Rays, which do great frozen cocktails and jazz, and Mr. Bao.
And Pizza by the Slice.
And oh, yeah. Pizza by the Slice at Voodoo Rays. And then next door, you've got Mr. Bao as well. So... But Louis, you've got a deep cut for us.
I've got one more mainstream cut, which is Forza Wine.
Oh, yes. I'm glad you mentioned it.
You've got to shout it out. I mean, it's pretty gentrification.
It is. But frankly, the main thing to say about it is that I've never come across a better view from the top of Forza, whatever it's called.
I think it's Wine.
Wine.
Yeah.
The view of London... from the terrace there is almost second to none. You're talking Primrose Hill levels of view, and you get the beautiful undulations of South London if you look to the south.
To the south. And good view of the station off to the west.
Yeah.
I mean, but they've also nailed the food and drink offering in that setting is, I think, the thing that brings that all together. It's like, yeah, you've got a cool spot and it looks cool. But kind of like Levels has that. The car parks, to those that don't know, just over the way, there's a car park which has a rooftop which has been used as a drinks and dining destination. But what they do with Forza is that you've got really delicious drinks menu, reasonably priced cocktails by London standards, and a really nice sort of light menu of Italian food, which is delicious. And
Italian tapas.
Yeah, exactly. And that all just kind of sits really well together. Anyway, the deeper cut, the place that I probably actually get the most food in Peckham is Yarders. I think it's Yarders.
Yadas. Oh, yeah.
Yadas.
Tell us about it.
That is a Kurdish restaurant on Rye Lane. And if you are ever there, get yourself a falafel beauty. Costs you about 12 quid at least right now.
For a kebab.
It's not a kebab. It's a mezze. It's a mezze. Okay. Plate. And it's falafel and it's all these dips and all these salads. And honestly, it is the nicest dish on paper that I know of in Peckham.
On paper? What about in practice?
Big shouts. I'm now reviewing all the other things I've ever eaten in Peckham. did I mean that? I love it. I love it.
I love it.
So that's my deep cut. Check it out.
Okay. What are you going to leave us with about Peckham?
Let's talk about... Okay. I'll leave you with this. If you walk down Bellenden Road, you'll see some distinctive street furniture at the junction or the sort of hub around Schumet Road as well. There are some cast iron bollards. Now, those were designed and built by one of Britain's most preeminent sculptors, one Anthony Gormley, and are based on the simplified forms of a peg, an oval, a snowman, and a penis. And I will not give you any prizes for guessing which is which.
Okay, so we started with a tit, and we're ending with a penis. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Peckham, over and out.